Thanks so much for joining us today on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Larry Mueller here, and I'm really happy to have with me as a guest today the author of a book called Portage, A Family, A Canoe, and the Search for the Good Life. Sue Leaf has authored several books. She's a trained zoologist, writes frequently on environmental topics, and she and her husband, Tom, and oftentimes their children, have paddled the waters of North America for a long, long time, about 40 years now. And she joins us by phone today from Minnesota. Great to have her along. I really enjoyed her book, and I hope you'll have a chance to read it as well. And I hope you'll join in today. What experiences have you had on the water, maybe in your canoe, maybe with your kayak, but have you learned some valuable life lessons? She talks about life lessons in her book as well. Join in, 1-800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org or post on my Facebook page. Our Facebook page title is The Larry Mueller Show. And Sue Leaf, welcome.
Hi, thanks for inviting me here.
Well, it's wonderful to have you with us today, and I really did enjoy your book. I love how you organized it, too. Go ahead.
Chronologically, beginning with my first sighting of a canoe, yes.
That was so cool, and then to take it through the all those years, 35 years or so. That, by the way, share that first time you saw a canoe.
Well, I was a child, and I think maybe I'd seen them before, but I hadn't really thought about them. And I was at our family cabin, where we only went around the lake in a rowboat. And when I saw this very sleek, very nimble craft on the water, I just kind of perked up. And there were two people, one in the bow, one in the stern, paddling, and they were talking because, of course, you don't have a motor, so you can hear each other. And I thought, geez, you know, if I had one of those canoes, I was really interested because I was already interested in zoology. I was really interested in the fish, the sunnies in the lake, and I thought I could sneak up on the sunnies and I could see them in the weeds.
And your first time in a canoe really changed your life, didn't it?
It did. Well, and as I was writing this book, I was trying to recall all my earliest memories of canoes. And I began to see how a canoe had been a liberating force in my life, something I hadn't realized before. But my first time in a canoe occurred when I was a young teenager, and I got an invitation from some neighbors who were very well equipped with canoes and with training to go on Lake of the Isles in Minneapolis. And I came home and I asked my dad, and my dad said, no, you can't do that. It's too dangerous. They're too tippy. But I could already swim, and I so wanted to go in that canoe that I defied him one of the very few times in my life, and I thought I was just going to get, I was probably going to be grounded for the rest of the summer, and instead I had no repercussions, and I think something happened that day.
Yeah,
a liberating experience.
You grew up a little bit in a way, and your dad probably recognized that.
Maybe, yeah.
Oh, my goodness me. Well, I really enjoyed the, you know, as I, there were things that I thought about after, you know, going through it. One of the things I thought about your book was there were a lot of times when you were in a bit of danger.
Well, you know, that's what you remember. And you always remember when you make a bad choice and you tip the canoe.
Yeah.
And we try very hard not to tip canoes, especially when we're on a trip, because, you know, it could be disastrous getting your gear wet. And I think we have never tipped on a canoe trip where we err on the side of caution. But when we're on a day trip, you know, where you can get your clothes wet because you can paddle to the next takeout point and get to the car, that's when we take risks or think about more outlandish things to do, like running the rapids, running the ledges on the Brule River in northwestern Wisconsin. That was not a good idea.
No, probably not. I've never done it myself, but I've observed those rapids. I've seen those rapids, and
Well, I think they're fun in a kayak, in a closed craft, but in an open canoe, Well, and you know, remember in that story, my husband and sons did run those rapids in the first canoe, but it was the second canoe that didn't fare so well.
The new canoe.
Right. No, it was the Grumman that had, it was more sticky. Aluminum surface as opposed to the Royal X. The Royal X kind of slipped right through, but the Grumman took on water and then it rolled.
That's right. I'd forgotten. Nick in Green Bay has something that I think is worth talking about right now. Nick, hi. Thanks for calling.
Thanks for taking my call. When I was in high school, I was a horrible kid. Like, I was getting in trouble with the law and stuff. And to punish me, they sent me to Outward Bound in Ely, Minnesota.
Mm-hmm.
It was the most horrible experience I've ever had, and I'd do it again in a heartbeat because I loved it. I mean, I spent 30 days in the Boundary Waters, and I'm working on getting back. That was when I was 17, so that was a long time ago. A
couple of years ago, at least.
And it was I completely changed my mind on life in general. I mean, I'd be in prison right now if it wasn't for Outward Bound.
Oh.
Yeah. You know, and one of the reasons we started our kids early in canoeing and took them on canoe trips is that you do build kind of, it's a team building thing, you know, and that's a good thing for a family to have common experiences together, and then you have hardships together and you work together to decide how you're going to face them. And I think our family actually became much stronger because of those canoe trips.
I would bet. Nick, thank you so much for calling. I really appreciate your call. And you write, the Boundary Waters occurs in your writing in several chapters. And the first chapter where it appears, you kind of loved it. And over time, there are concerns that get raised, that you raise.
Right. I do love the Boundary Waters. And I'm so attracted to that northern landscape with the emergent rock, the bedrock, the basalt cliffs, and the oligotrophic lakes that are clear, and the conifers. Yes. And I realize when we go to Canadian provincial parks that share that same landscape, how much I miss them. But the Boundary Waters is just this, it's like the gold standard for canoeists, and it's just gotten so crowded that when our children actually were fairly young, we stopped going there and went to other places. Rivers are greatly underused by paddlers, and we can go and find fresh campsites and not a lot of noise or use on rivers all through Wisconsin and Minnesota.
Isn't it something? And at one point when you're writing about the Boundary Waters, and you're writing about places in Minnesota that you write that, you know what, we've got all this wilderness, so to speak, right here, you know, practically out our back door. There really isn't always a need to go to the Boundary Waters.
Right. And I think as the world population gets bigger, we're going to need to recognize wilderness in other places than designated wilderness areas. And in truth, with the use of cell phones now, the Boundary Waters is less wild than, say, the central Minnesota, north central Minnesota peatlands, which doesn't have the coverage, the cell phone coverage, and doesn't have the amenities like portage trails.
Yeah, you're probably right. And if you get in trouble in the Boundary Waters now, it almost seems like plenty of people there to help out.
Right. And with cell phones, you know, you can get help to you really quickly.
Yeah.
And I'm of two minds about that. I think I mentioned this in the book. It does shrink the size of wilderness, being able to be connected, but it doesn't shrink the abundance of wildness that we have within us and that we have all around us that is, we don't really stop and look for or explore. And it was Thoreau said, in wildness is the preservation of the world.
Yeah, absolutely. Jeff in Madison has something. Hi, Jeff. Thanks for calling.
Well, hey, thanks for having me. So I used to be a guide in the Boundary Waters, and I've been lucky enough to guide out in the Middle Fork in Idaho. But as I get older, the phrase simple pleasures comes to mind. And you were just talking about rivers. And for me and our three daughters, there's a stretch of the Yahara River where you put in, about 10 minutes outside of Madison on Highway 51, And it's a lovely 4 or 5 mile stretch of calm, quiet, meandering river within minutes of Madison. It's awesome. Our kids grew up on that paddling, and it was just fabulous. I've been back there again and again and again, and it's always the same, and it's always beautiful, and I always love it. So put your canoe on your car and try the Yahara River right south of Madison.
Jeff, thank you so much for calling. Sue, a comment from you?
Well, I just want to point out that rivers are really good waterways to take canoe trips on, short day trips and also longer several-day trips, because especially if you're getting towards middle age, you don't have to pick up that canoe and carry it on your shoulders. Generally, you can, if you choose wisely, you don't have to portage. And they're really great for kids. And we started the kids on rivers because when they're small, they can't carry their own gear, and they always need a lot of gear. So if you're doing portages, you're going to be making many trips over that portage with small children. But if you're on rivers, you just pull out at the campsite and set up camp.
Yeah, there you go. And again, thanks so much for calling, Jeff. Appreciate it. You can join in, too. Number to call, 1-800-642-1234. 800-642-1234. What are your experiences with canoeing? Experiences to share? Love to hear from you. 800-642-1234. Email us at talk@wpr.org. And if you've got a great photo that goes along with canoeing, we've got a nice one up on our Facebook page at the Larry Mueller Show. But if you want to post one up there, we'd love to see that as well. Just go to the Larry Mueller Show Facebook page, and you can post your questions or your photos right there. Your experiences have, I mean, you've been a lot of places over the years in your canoe.
We have. My husband is an avid canoeist, and he keeps a file. Every time he hears of a river that he thinks he might want to paddle, he writes it down, or he's seeking out information online about it, and we eventually get to all of them.
And he's the kind of the planner.
He is. He's methodical. He likes to do it his way, which is usually great. I mean, there aren't too many people I would run a rapids with, you know, to rely on them to navigate a rapids, and he's one of the few.
Yeah, and he carries the canoe.
He carries the canoe. Yeah, we're still paddling an Old Town canoe made of Royal X, and it's 65 pounds. We actually got a midlife crisis canoe, a red one. That was only 55 pounds, but it's only 15 feet. And we found that the canoe didn't track as well in the water as our 16-footer. So we go with a bigger canoe when we go.
When you just go, just the two of you go.
Right.
Go ahead.
It's easier to pack a little bit bigger canoe, you know, with your Duluth packs.
Yeah, you're certainly right about that. Well, the rivers, let's talk about a couple of experiences. I know there was one that was, I think it was your 15th wedding anniversary. Were you on the Missouri that time?
I don't know what anniversary that was. It was an anniversary trip, right. Yes, that was our first experience paddling in the West. And I can't say enough superlatives about Western rivers, because the landscape is usually short grass prairie, so it's very bare. There aren't a lot of trees. The vistas are yawning. So we were on the Missouri, and it looked like there was a storm coming when we set in. But nobody told us to not do this. And so we thought, okay, we hadn't heard a weather forecast. We had just gotten into central Montana that morning, and so we put in. And it was gorgeous. We're bird watchers. There was so much bird life to look at. And there was kind of a mist falling, but we didn't really pay much attention until I realized, I thought my hair was getting kind of wet, so maybe I should put on my poncho. So then we stopped paddling and dug the ponchos out of the pack. They're always packed on top. And then when we finally decided that this rain, it was really raining and that it wasn't going to let up, we thought, well, what are we doing here? Maybe we just need to set up the tent. And that's at the point which we realized that our fingers were so stiff that we couldn't, we had trouble digging the stakes and had trouble snapping the clips on, had really trouble getting the fly on the tent. So much trouble that when we were hustling to get our gear into the tent. We just threw the sleeping bags in, and then we realized that there had been water collecting on the floor of the tent while we had been struggling with the fly. And by the time we got into the tent, Tom was shivering uncontrollably, and he could not stop. And that's the point at which I got really worried, because we had seen a film on hypothermia in a FIAD class that we had taken in college. And I now realize that that dear professor in that FIAD class was protecting us from a moment just like this. And so we knew what to do. We got the wet clothes off. We both crawled into a sleeping bag. I went out to the packs that we had tucked under the tarp to get some GORP so we had high-calorie food to eat. And eventually he stopped shivering. But the wind was so intense, and the lightning was flashing, and it lasted for a couple hours. And we thought, what are we doing? We've got four small children at home. Why, you know, there was no way to contact anyone. This is pre-cell phone. But I think the next 2 days on that river, we didn't see anyone. Yeah. Anyway, we were going through a wilderness area. And, it didn't stop us from going back to the Mariah several years later, but we got a new appreciation for how quickly a western wind can cool your skin if it's a little wet.
I got caught in something like that once at a Solberg Lake in central Wisconsin, up near Phillips, Wisconsin, and I know what it's like to be in a tent. Actually, in that case, a tornado came through. There were trees that took down some trees right around us, actually, but fortunately didn't land on us. But it's a scary thing to be inside that tent.
Which offers really
zero.
It keeps you dry, and it might keep the wind out, but that's it. Not for falling trees. Right.
Oh, man. Skip and Milton, Greta and Dodgeville, we'll get to you in just a second. Just a reminder, we're visiting today with Sue Leaf. She is the author of Portage, A Family, A Canoe, and the Search for the Good Life. I'm Larry Mueller. Jill Nadeau, our on-air producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We're happy to have Sue Leaf with us right now, the author of Portage, A Family, A Canoe, and the Search for the Good Life. She's paddled with her husband, Tom, for 40 years, the waters of North America, and it's wonderful, wonderful stories. Each chapter, a story in and of itself, which is another thing I kind of like about the book. Sue?
That, this kind of the onion skins of the book, it began as just a recounting of our canoe trips and kind of a subtle nudge to readers to get out of the boundary waters and look around you on places to canoe. But as I was organizing the stories, and actually as I was putting pen to paper, I realized that there was the arc of a romance, of a marriage, and then in a family, and then the empty nesters reemerging. And then I also realized much later that there's also the arc of a life here. And I think that last essay on the search for the good life, what is the good life?
I love that essay.
That was, and you know from reading the essay now, that was actually a high school assignment that Tom and I worked on together before we started dating.
I love that story. And tell that story.
Okay, so I knew Tom from a social circle, friends, lots of friends, but I didn't know him really well, and we were going to go to the same college together. And so he was in my social studies class. And at the end of the year, you know, all these hard topics were long gone, and we turned to soft topics. And one was a value clarifications course called What is the Good Life? And we had to pick a partner and discuss what we considered a good life would be. And when I think about it now, that's not a bad thing to get 17-year-olds to start thinking about.
Yeah.
But anyway, I picked Tom because I didn't want a deadbeat. I wanted someone that I thought would probably pull his weight in a project. And vice versa. And so we worked together, and we quickly found out that we had the same ideas, that we wanted to spend time in nature, that we were very family-oriented. We didn't want a big flashy life. We didn't want, for example, a big car or a big house or to be famous. But we wanted to have family life. We wanted to travel, and we wanted to spend time in nature. So we put together a slideshow, and we had a musical tract of Paul Simon and James Taylor, you know, all the, in Chicago. I think I'm really dating myself now. And I think Tom still has that tract of music, in fact, because one day he surprised me by playing it on our old tape deck. I laughed.
Oh, it's such a wonderful story. And, of course, 7 years later, you're married.
Right.
Which is in itself a great... But, you know, there's one thing. I want to talk about that last chapter some more. And I want to get back to the phones, too. But one thing you don't mention is the grade you got for that.
Oh, we got an A. It's May of your senior year. Everybody gets A's at that point.
I knew it. I thought it had to be an A, but I had to ask for sure. Well, now let's go to Skip in Milton, and then we'll get to Greta, too. Skip, hi. Thanks for calling.
Well, thanks for having such a great show, Larry and Sue. I came into this program late because I was out skiing on what little snow we had left here. So, it's been a part of my life since, Boy Scouts, really, canoeing, down a number of rivers in Wisconsin, and some of the really small rivers are really fun to do, too, as well as the bigger ones. But when it came to our family, when our girls were very young, in fact, the youngest daughter was less than 2 years old. She was about 2 weeks from turning 2 years old when we left on a Canadian wilderness. It was in the Quetico Provincial Park on a canoe trip, and we had some weather and got down to 17 degrees at night.
Oh.
And some people thought, oh, you took your little toddler out in that kind of a situation, and yeah, we had a great time. We did an annual trip to Quetico Provincial Park or Boundary Waters pretty much every year as a family trip. When the girls were young, we'd do it in the fall, and when they were in school, we'd do it in the summer. When they got older, we took them out of class. One of the teachers said, well, they'll probably learn more on this trip than they would
in the classroom.
In school, so they were supportive of them going. But just to show you what that fostered, you know, doing all these wilderness trips, and we did backpacking and skiing in the winter and all kinds of stuff, too. But the youngest daughter has worked for the National Park Service the last three summers, as first 2 years as paramedic and last year as a ranger and paramedic in different national parks, and she's graduated to... She does ski patrol in the winter, but this summer she's going to be a backcountry ranger in Yellowstone Park.
No.
And living the dream, you know. She loves doing that, and she's really good at what she does. But and the other daughter's doing well, too, just going a different direction. She's a Navy pilot and flight instructor. So we still get together with them on a canoe trip whenever we can, you know.
I'm going to bring Skip. That's such a great story, and it mirrors a little bit your experiences, doesn't it, Sue?
Yes, traveling with children. I do a little bit slower, but it's just a delight to have children with you.
You know, and it's kind of, there was one thing I when you were talking about rivers and the advantage of rivers, and especially when with children. You know, you've got a river, it's maybe going 3 miles an hour.
Right.
Or maybe it's going 5 miles an hour, whatever. But it's going, and you're going with it. And so for little ones, it's a river can be a real advantage because you don't have to work too hard.
Right. Even if you paddle and the river is going 3 miles an hour, you're probably going to go 3 miles per hour.
Yeah.
That's what we've seen, yeah.
Yeah, it's and Skip, thank you so much. The fact that your children develop that love for the outdoors, and I assume that's the case with yours as well, Sue.
Yes, they are all active canoeists. They are cross country skiers, and two just skied the Berkey last weekend.
Huh?
They're cyclists. Yes, and they're hikers. it's really nice to be in, outside with them.
Yeah. Thank you, Skip, for calling. I want to give Greta in Dodgeville a chance to join us. Greta, hi. Thanks for calling.
Hi. Thanks for having me. I just wanted to share that I have always had, or in the past, I suppose about 5 or 7 years, I bought 2 kayaks so that I could always have a friend with me. We have children, however, they're more city boys than kayakers, so mm-hmm. I've tried. But I love taking friends, and because we live near the Wisconsin River, I've really enjoyed taking friends down the river. And when I was a beginner, I was also scared about that river because it is a very dangerous body of water, or known for that. But I just want to have some tips as far as how to encourage my friends to come with me on the river so that they're not timid about it and that we're safe and do everything we're supposed to do. So I'll take your answer.
How old are your kids?
Oh, I have a 19-year-old and a 16-year-old, and they've gone with us before and enjoyed it.
But it's your friends that you're worried about.
Yeah, it's my friends. My kids will go with me, and they're fine, but my friends are always very timid about going with me, and they'll choose not to because it's the Wisconsin River.
Oh, that's too bad.
It is too bad. Well, you know, I would just tell them all the real benefits you get from fronting something that's a challenge. You know, that I really feel good about myself when we've run a rapids and we've come through successfully. And, you know, it's such a good metaphor for life, and it's so useful to me at other times. When you have to do a hard thing, you think, well, the only way to do it is to run this rapids. And when you're in the middle of it, of running it, you just paddle hard. You don't have any of this existential angst about whether you're going to tip or not, because you're working too hard to not tip. And so I'm really happy that hard situations on canoe trips have given me kind of a metaphor for getting through other difficulties in life. And you could try that as a pitch to them.
Frankly, the Wisconsin River, I don't know, Sue, if you've paddled at least the lower.
No, but it's on our list.
The lower Wisconsin is, I mean, I've paddled a lot of it, but the lower Wisconsin in particular is beautiful, beautiful. There's beautiful country there.
Is this below where the Kickapoo comes in? Doesn't the Kickapoo feed into the Wisconsin?
Yeah.
Spring Green. Okay, yes.
Spring Green and below Spring Green. It's just beautiful, Greta.
Gorgeous.
It really is. I think you have to make it safe, so that they understand. If they have good preservers that don't get in their way and make it bulky and, you know, hard to paddle.
Right.
If the food is good.
Well, the company's always good.
if the wine is, you know, there and or whatever. You have to paint a picture for them.
It's always a challenge.
Yeah.
But once we go, they realize it was okay. It's just getting them out there.
Yeah, it's getting them out there. That's the trick. Well, good luck. Thanks a lot for calling. Oh, man. Jack in Colorado Springs, it's your turn. Hi, Jack.
Hi. I'm a Wisconsin native and get back there quite a bit, and I'm familiar with paddling some of the rivers, the Wisconsin upper and lower. Just wondering if your guest has been to the Sylvania Wilderness area just north of Land O'Lakes, that would be in the Upper Peninsula of Michigan, and also if she's ever canoed any of the areas in the Upper Peninsula.
I have not been to the Sylvania Wilderness area, and that is on our list also. We just drove kind of past it this last month when we were cross-country skiing on the Upper Peninsula. The only Michigan River I've canoed, the Two Hearted River is on our list. We have canoed the Ossable in, on the LP, and that was a really lovely little river. That's kind of a famous fly fishing river, and it was, you know, the birds are, we're bird watchers, the birds are kind of different in Michigan, so it was, we saw...
Portland's warblers. if I remember.
That we did see, but we didn't see it on the Ossipal, and we didn't hear them on the Ossipal, although I think you might be able to. We actually saw them on a pine tract out of Grayling. When we did that right before we set off on the canoe trip. That had to be added to our life list, right, the Kirtlands.
And the you know, that particular, when you were talking about the Ossipal, and you talked about going through the Mason tract.
Right.
Of land. That's and I didn't know about that. Talk about that a little bit. I'm sure Jack would be interested in that as well.
Well, it is a wilderness tract, and it attracts mostly fly fishermen. But it is a portion of the river that has been reclaimed to wilderness. That is, that they physically removed cabins. And there's some people have been grandfathered in, but they're reclaiming it back to wilderness, and it really looks pretty good.
It's thousands of acres, isn't it?
Right. I don't really know how. I can't remember how big the Mason Tract is now. Do I mention that in my book?
You do mention it in the book, and I can't remember either. But I know it's thousands of acres, and I thought, I've got to get over there and see that.
Another kind of wilderness tract on the UP that interests me is the Saney National Wildlife Refuge. Right in the middle, and we've talked about going back there this summer and canoeing in Saney.
Well, this is Jack. My only advice for all those places is take lots of bug spray.
Yeah.
Yes. Well, and not go in June.
Absolutely.
Absolutely. Jack, thank you so much. Yeah, June is not a good time to be on in some of those areas unless you've got some really good mosquito repellent.
Right.
And black flies.
Yes, maybe even netting.
Even netting. Jim in Mauston, thank you for calling. Hello.
Hi, Larry. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
Yeah, speaking of mosquitoes, this same trip that my son and his classmates were on back when they graduated, we ended up with one tent because it was raining so hard. We went back to our supplier and just stayed that night, and one of the kids I put in charge of bringing one of the tents, he'd forgotten it, so we didn't discover that till we were about 12 miles out.
Oh.
But the reason I called, it was we were up there during the, I think they called it a blowdown in 1999.
This was the Boundary Waters you're talking about.
Yeah, the Boundary Waters. And we had just come off the lakes, and the weather came through, and I think it knocked down maybe 12 million trees, if I recall.
It was just devastating, right?
Yeah. I mean, we were watching people that you're going in. I believe there was a couple of deaths in that too. But on the way out, we got in the cars and headed south again. And I think the main gear up there, if you're a local, you keep a chainsaw in your truck or vehicle. But we helped clear Highway 2, probably for the 20 or 30 miles through there. The guys had cut the logs, and we'd. Me and the seven other kids, we'd haul the logs off the side of the road just to make one path for the vehicles coming in and out of there.
That's a great story. You've dealt over the years in many of the stories, blowdowns or trees kind of blocking your way in the canoe.
Well, yeah, we call them sweepers because the canoe can tend to be drawn in parallel to the tree that's across the stream, and if it gets that point, you can start to rock real dangerously. And in fact, we were cleaning here in Minnesota. We were cleaning up the Sunrise River one May day, and the river was flowing fast because there was still meltwater in it. And we were along beside the sweeper, and you know, it's not a really dangerous river, and it wasn't very deep. But I looked back to see what Tom was doing, and all I could see was his hat on the water. He was not in the canoe, and at some point he had gotten out of the canoe, thinking it was shallow enough that he could stabilize the canoe by standing on the bottom. And he found out it was over his head, so that's what the hat was doing on the water. And I thought, well, this is great. But then he reemerged. He popped right back up and put the hat back on his head and then swam with the canoe so to have us clear the sweeper.
What a great story. Oh, and Jim, again, thank you. We're getting nearer the end here, but I I want to go back to that last chapter, which I really loved, that little essay on what is the good life. The good life is part of the title of your book is A Family, A Canoe, and the Search for the Good Life. What is the good life?
Here's the meta story on this book, and that is I think we are all looking for the good life all the time. Right? All the time we make choices, we're not making choices for the bad life. No. We're making what we can see at the moment we think is the good life, or as Tom points out in that essay, what we can afford of what we think is the good life. And it took me a while to appreciate the full meaning of the book Portage, that life is a portage from one abyss to the other. And you how you take that portage is your search for the good life.
Yeah.
And in this book, I'm kind of suggesting that you can find the good life out in the woods.
Yeah, and in the rivers. And we haven't really touched on the one aspect of it, but one of the things I really enjoyed about your book is the little history that we get with each of these rivers and places that you canoed.
Yes, and biology, the botany, the geology, because we're doing all those things when we're outside, and it's surrounding us.
Yeah, well, you've written a wonderful book, Sue, and I really enjoyed reading it, and I hope, when it's been out for a little while now, we were really delighted to be able to have you on, and I hope it's done well.
It has done real well. Surprised and pleased.
Well, that's good. Anytime you write a book, you give me a call and we'll talk about it, okay?
I will do that. Thank you.
Yeah, thanks, Sue. Sue Leaf, our guest today. She is the author of a really fine book. It's called Portage, A Family, A Canoe, and the Search for the Good Life. And it was, you know what? As I've read through that, she's had a good life. She's searched for that life, and she's found it, I think. She's got a wonderful life with her husband and with her family and friends. And it was lots of fun to read about it.